I'm going to ask our marshal to call the next case for consideration.
Next case is A23-1899, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Marquis Deonte Gardner, Defendant, Midwest Bonding, LLC, Appellant.
Mr. McGeaney, we've seen you many times. You know the rules. When you are ready to proceed, go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jim McGeaney. I am the attorney for the appellant in this matter, Midwest Bonding, LLC. And Judge Frisch is correct. Respondents did not file a brief, so they're not permitted to argue this morning. I'm before this court appealing the district court's order denying our petition to reinstate and discharge two forfeited bail bonds in one district court criminal file. I believe my statement of the facts is undisputed, but I just want to go over quickly a couple of what I think are important facts. One is that the district court and the attorney for respondent or the county attorney's office in the district court action made quite a point to argue that Mr. Gardner, the defendant here, failed to appear for a jury trial. I think the record reflects that the calendar that Mr. Gardner failed to appear for was a remote trial calendar, which is a practice that's been developed since the COVID pandemic in many of the district courts in this state to kind of take a status check of the court's upcoming trial calendar.
But Mr. McGeaney, he's still required to appear, right?
Correct, Your Honor. I don't dispute
and the district
that.
And the district court can issue a warrant if he doesn't appear.
They can. They can. The other fact that's in our statement of facts and is clear from the record was it doesn't appear that Mr. Gardner received notice of the hearing. The notices of hearing that were sent to Mr. Gardner were returned as undeliverable. And so, at least from the district court record in MCRO, and that's referenced in our statement of facts in our brief, Mr. Gardner, it doesn't appear anyway that he ever received a notice of that hearing. Judge, I don't disagree that he failed to appear and a warrant can issue. It happens. But the prejudice factor, which I'll get into later, I think the state and the court were saying that, well, he failed to appear for a jury calendar and I did all this work and I'm prejudiced. It's not really the case. And counsel didn't respond to our brief, but the argument that the state was prejudiced because the defendant wasn't at the remote trial call, which was probably a status check, really is not supported.
I think the prejudice argument kind of flowed in with the judge's determination that this fellow could have been at large for quite a while. It was a trooper that discerned his whereabouts or arrested him. I'd like you to respond to the judge's criticism of the boilerplate information that was appearing in the affidavit regarding your client's position, the bond position. It seems as if he's saying you regurgitate the same thing. There was not a lot of extra effort that was put into securing this defendant's presence.
Certainly. And I agree with the court that the district judge was quite critical of my client's affidavit and petition. It would appear to me that the district judge is biased against all these Midwest bond petitions. He seems to recount his memory of our other petitions. But you have to remember those, you know, Midwest is required to make good faith efforts, right? That's the standard here. What good faith efforts have we made? The defendant was at large for 3 days. It's not as though my client had an opportunity to get the fugitive recovery agent out to his house and start conducting surveillance and doing all those things that would ordinarily be in an affidavit because the defendant was apprehended. And it's not really clear from the record, the state didn't submit any evidence or affidavits, whether the defendant was apprehended on the warrant for his failure to appear at the trial calendar or on the warrant that was pending for the probable cause found that he had committed a homicide about a month earlier in February. And I don't see it in the record on which warrant the defendant was apprehended on. But frankly, the defendant was apprehended so quickly. What more could my client have possibly done at that point in the proceedings? He We did what we're able to do in the 3 days. We try to find Mr. Gardner. We reach out to him. We can't locate him. We hire a fugitive recovery agent. And then we learn that Gardner is already in custody. So if Gardner was at large for 30 days and the affidavit didn't contain any specifics about what was done in those 30 days, I think the district court would have a more tenable argument. But here, the timing is so short that really, and the boilerplate language that we're being criticized for is, I agree that that's the common practice of my client in every fail to appear. Why would we not include that language just because it's in every single case? You know, we're required to inform the signing judges of what we're doing. And so, you know, it's the same when you make a summary judgment argument to this court. Yeah, you spend 2 pages on the standard for summary judgment, even though everybody knows what it is, you still do it. We don't get criticized for boilerplate language in our oral, in our written arguments because we do it. That's what lawyers do. And we didn't have enough time to make more efforts. I think more importantly in this case is the district court's behavior in criticizing bail bonding, conducting ex parte communication with the prosecuting attorney, and then saying that's what the court wants is ex parte communication, when we learned that the state had emailed the judge's chambers without letting us know that they were going to respond to our petition, and then the district judge criticizing us and saying, well, I directed ex parte communication. I think it's concerning and more apparent to the judge's determination that the court made a determination based on erroneous views of the law here. If you look at the district court judge's rationale, finding that we didn't make good faith efforts, he blames Midwest for the fact that the defendant here has been accused of a new crime. As we all know, this defendant is presumed innocent. And frankly, the bail bonds in Minnesota are appearance bonds only. They're not performance bonds. The state court administrator's own form, 702, is clear that these are appearance bonds only, that they do not guarantee conditions of release. Interestingly, the district court criticizes Midwest and cites that the defendant violated his conditions of release while on our bonds as another reason that we didn't make good faith efforts. These were unconditional bail bonds guaranteed by the Minnesota Constitution. Mr. Gardner wasn't subject to any conditions of release, and yet the district court issued a warrant for his arrest for violations of conditions of release that he wasn't subjected to. And then both the district court and the prosecuting attorney cite that fact as grounds that the Shetsky factors weigh against reinstatement because the defendant was absent on our bond and he violated his conditions of release. That shows willful conduct and not good faith. So I think that's a more important factor than arguing, or at least the district court's criticism of our boilerplate language on a case where the offender was at large for only 3 days. I know that was a long answer, Your Honor, to Judge Werke's question about the criticism, but I just want to point out that it appears from my reading of this file that the district court was critical from the beginning of the fact that this offender was out on a bail bond and the fact that he committed or is alleged to have committed a crime while out on his bail bond is being attributed to my client when that's not the law. The defendant's conduct while released on a bond is not one of the things to consider in analyzing the Shetsky factors, nor is the allegation that, and when I say conduct, I mean the allegation he violated his conditions of release that he wasn't subject to, or that he's alleged to have committed new crime. I don't think those are factors that come in that are part of the Shetsky analysis here. If you look at the Shetsky factors, the purpose of bail here was satisfied. It was an unconditional bail amount. The offender was, the bail was revoked and a warrant issued. And on one of the other warrants, on one warrant or another, the offender's back in custody within 3 days. So this court's found offenders at large for much longer periods of time, the bail being satisfied. And when you consider the fact that it's questionable whether the defendant here even had notice of the hearing he failed to appear for, that factor weighs in favor of reinstatement and discharge because the cause, purpose, and length of the defendant's absence. Well, the cause and purpose of his this defendant's absence is likely he didn't have notice of the hearing. And the length of his absence was only 3 days. So the Shetsky factor weighs in favor of reinstatement and discharge, and the district court relied on factors that are outside the law in its determination that the bond should not be discharged under the first Shetsky factor. I'm pulling up the district court's order and those findings. So, and again, the district court's refusal to allow a hearing on our request after the state emailed ex parte to say they were going to reply and then replied like 7 days after the court's own deadline. And when we realized that there had been a response in our request to address the state's response and the errors in law, by the way, the district court basically cites the state's erroneous arguments in their memorandum and its order, clearly show that the district court was not following the law and abused its discretion. In factor two, the good faith efforts of Midwest, again, the district court and the state both cite the defendant's violations of his conditions of release and say that they're attributable to appellant as grounds for saying this factor weighs against reinstatement. I'm repeating myself here, but the good faith efforts of the bond company are outlined in our affidavit that's criticized because it's the same affidavit, but those are good faith efforts. This court has held that those are good faith efforts, hiring a fugitive recovery agent. In fact, our client goes above and beyond. We try to make sure offenders, we take steps to make sure that the offenders have notice of their hearing, which this court, multiple opinions in two that I argued, have held that there are no requirements pre-hearing for a surety to ensure that an offender appears. And there's nothing, this court's never held, and there's no law that says that even if these were conditional bail bonds, which they weren't, but even if they were, the appellant somehow had a duty to ensure that an offender or bailee is complying with the conditions of release they're set out, especially when you read the form language that the state court administrators use in Form 702. Clearly states this is an appearance bond only and specifically states that the surety is not guaranteeing conditions of release. So the good faith efforts here, again, Midwest makes good faith efforts in the minimal 3 days that Gardner is at large. As measured by the fault of willfulness against Mr. Gardner, I don't think you can fault Mr. Gardner for not coming to court when he didn't get notice of the hearing. That factor weighs in favor of reinstatement and discharge as well. And then you talk about what good faith efforts did appellant make to apprehend and produce the defendant. Well, we're circling back now, right? All we did was check the electronic records that we have available to us. And by the way, I'm going to continue to argue in every case before this court, whether it's today or in the future, those are good faith efforts. And I think I would be negligent and maybe committing malpractice if I don't make sure that those efforts are recited in my client's affidavits. We get beat up all the time by the district courts about the lack of information in our affidavits. And then we get beat up because they're too long. But that language in that affidavit shows good faith. Not every offender who is at large, in fact, I think this court's probably well aware, and everybody who's been a district court judge knows, the majority of criminal defendants who have warrants issued for whatever reason, failed to appear, violations of conditions of release, missed summonses because they went to the wrong address a year after the offense, all those warrants that get executed, the vast majority of offenders are apprehended by law enforcement. It's a small percentage that our fugitive recovery agents, our agents do apprehend. I could produce a dozen affidavits just from 2023 and 2024 where our efforts apprehended the offender. But that's a very small percentage. And it's for obvious reasons. When there's a warrant outstanding, there's so much more resources available to the state. There's so much more opportunity for an offender to be in a traffic stop, go through security at an airport, get involved in an altercation and be asked for their ID at Barclays somewhere. So the fact that Midwest didn't apprehend this defendant should not be the factor that says Midwest didn't make good faith efforts. And I'm going to circle back because the district court in their findings, again, talk about the lack of specificity in the affidavit as saying that we didn't make good faith efforts. And then the speculation, by the way, it's back to Judge Werke's original question, I guess I didn't address, and I'll cover it quickly now. It's pure speculation that Mr. Gardner would have been at large longer than the 3 days had he not been arrested by the state patrol that day. We had already hired a fugitive recovery agent. Mr. Gardner could have been arrested later that afternoon by our fugitive recovery agent, and maybe we wouldn't be here this morning. So I think for the district court to speculate that, well, if he hadn't been arrested by the state patrol, certainly the administration of justice would have been further delayed, is speculative. And not, there's no facts to support that. That's just conjecture. He could have been arrested that night by our agent.
Point out your time has expired, Mr. McGinney.
Huh. I wasn't even watching the clock. I apologize. Does the panel have any questions for me? I'd be happy to answer.
Here's not. We do appreciate you appearing today on our Zoom platform. The matters are submitted. We'll be reviewing the case file and issuing a decision in the statutory timeframe. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day, everybody.